The Winter Champion Series with Hoggy about to kick off. We've got a very, very special guest with us. Hoggy's brought to you by the Sensational Seafood Sundays at Ribera's in North Melbourne. For just $99, enjoy a two-course lunch for two, including a bottle of wine. Sensational Seafood Sunday as well. Friday is Friends of Ribera's, and that means six freshly shucked oysters and a beer for just $15 between 4 and 7 for the freshest and best seafood. Can't go past Ribera's at 480 Victoria Street in North Melbourne. Just a 10-minute walk to Etihad. Give them a call, 9329 1634, or Google Ribera's. And the rest is easy, but let's talk some cricket.
I was throwing rocks at the TV when Faulkner was the sixth bowler used. For Michael Clarke to come on the fourth bowler in front of Faulkner is an absolute disgrace. What a load of junk that is. Kim tried to tell me one day, I think it was about 84, and West Indies, he tried to tell me it's a team game. And I said, no, it's not, Kim, it's an individual's game. Right, you're
bloody well right. On Halftime, right, Rodney Hall. Right. You're bloody
well right. You know you got a right to say. Rodney Hogg, great to have you back for the Winter Champion Series on Halftime. And today we are going all out with our champion. 563 wickets in the Test Arena from 124 matches at an average of 21.64. There's a whole lot more we could go through, but when you hear those numbers, there's only one man that comes to mind. His name is Glenn McGrary. He joins us. G'day, Glenn.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
We are very well, mate. Appreciate your time. I'm sure it's very much... Well, very busy these days, I imagine, with your world. There's plenty going on.
Oh, yeah, there's never a dull moment. I'm heading off to India end of the week for a bit a stint over there, a bit of coaching at the Fast Bowling Academy over there that I do stuff with. And, yeah, at home, we're renovating, plus we've got a bub on the way, so there's never a dull moment, mate.
Yeah, congratulations on that. That's fantastic news, by the way.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. No, really excited.
Well, that's obviously a highlight. Your 124 matches for Australia in the Test Arena are a highlight. What about spending a couple of days with Rodney Hogg? Where does that rank?
Yeah, it's spent a bit of time with Hoggy. It's always good fun. It's, yeah, hear about when Hoggy played and his stories, and, yeah, it's always good fun, mate.
You're very polite, Glenn. I would have gone much more aggressive on him.
No, it's... a fellow fast bowler, mate. We've got to look after each other. Part of the FPC, or the fast bowling cartel, we call ourselves. It's only the batsman we hook into.
Yeah, fair enough.
Glenn, it's interesting you say that word cartel, because obviously the fast bowling cartel, which I think Damien Fleming and you came up with that idea, the cartel.
Yeah.
What about the tall fast bowlers cartel? At the moment we've got Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, George, Copeland played just recently, that kid Gannon from up. Do they come to you for extra advice, these tall fast bowlers?
Oh, I chat to the boys every now and then. I don't have an official role with New South Wales or Australia, but I think it's a bit of the nature of the beast. Unless you're an express or a lunatic fast bowler like yourself, Hoggy, you need a bit of extra height to help you out, get that bounce. And, you know, I spoke to guys like Tendulkar and Lara, and they always said, you know, someone who could really get that, extract that bounce off a length was always tougher to face. So I think it's just the nature of the beast as well. If you're, you know, taller, you've got that good pace, it makes it even more difficult.
944 international wickets is quite amazing, and apart from standing on a ball, you really didn't have too many injury problems. How did you go about that? Is it just luck, or is it just unbelievable management? How did you do that?
I think there's probably a few reasons. One, probably genetics. My bone density is really high, and I can thank my grandparents for that. So on both sides, so that was handy. I had my action was fairly stress-free. It wasn't too strenuous. But, you know, I came back from the West Indies tour in 95. I was injured, torn side muscle, plus I weighed 77 kilos. So there was nothing of me. And I just realised then that if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm not going to get very, very far. Won't be in the game for too long. So I tracked down a trainer, a guy called Kev Chevelle, who I worked with from 95 onwards. And he just... Yeah, his philosophy was to make me unbreakable, or to train so much harder than you ever experienced out in the middle. I must say he achieved that easily. I used to look forward to the season starting to have a break. And I think it was that attitude and that sort of work, putting the work in off the field, that held me in good stead on the field. And from that moment on, I probably played majority of my career 95% fit or fitter. So, yeah. You've got to put the work in off the field if you're going to stay have longevity in the game.
But it's interesting you say the word break. Now, at the moment, the blokes don't get a break, do they? You said you enjoyed that little moment, or that time where you could get your body right. They don't get a break as much now, do they?
No, and I think that's part of the problems with fast bowlers getting injured. You need to put the strength back into the body. You know, bowling depletes your strength, running depletes your strength. So you need time to sort of refuel and recharge and to go again. And if you're not getting an off-season, sooner or later you're going to, you know, run out of fuel and get injured. So it's a tough one to sort of find that balance. I know they have that 7 or 8 week period where the IPL's played, where no international cricket's played. So it's getting tougher for the fast bowlers, but they have to find a way to manage it and keep strong and keep fit.
Have you had anything to do with the kid Cummins? Have you helped in any way, shape or form? Have you been happy with the way they've worked on him to get him right for international cricket?
I think he's going to have a big career in international cricket. You know, when he first started, he was only 18, so I'm a big rap for him. So I haven't had anything really to do with him. I know he's done a fair bit of work with Dennis. Sort of watching him bowl, I like his attitude and the way he goes about it. I think he's still got a couple of slight issues with his action. If he can fix that, he'll have a long career. So hopefully he's going to stay on the paddock and not get injured. But we'll wait and see.
A couple of enemies of yours, Ambrose and Walsh. And amazing. I just want to go through. I know you're a pretty modest sort of a bloke, but between them, they took 762 test wickets when they played with each other. And you and Warnie have got 1,001 wickets together when you played together. It's just absolutely amazing. You've got 53% of the wickets. Now, I know captains go down in history as, he was a great captain and he wasn't that good. But when you've got two blokes who get 53% of the wickets who get them at such a good economy, it wouldn't have been too hard to captain you two blokes, would it?
Oh no, we looked after the captains that well. You know, fast bowlers, you know, the captain or the batsman, they try to take all the credit, but I think bowling with Warnie at the other end was something I really enjoyed, and a lot of my wickets I can thank Warnie, because you know, you build up that pressure and you work well in partnership. So I think the captains I played under owe Warnie and myself a lot of credit. I'm happy to accept that.
Well, that was when you got to the elite level, when you get to play with the likes of Shane Keith Warne. What about when you're a young fella, Glenn? You're born in Dubbo, you grew up in Narromine. What was the cricket scene like in Narromine growing up?
Oh, yeah. You know, cricket and sport in the country is something that really brings the community together. I grew up a small country farm, about 10K out of town. So we always come into town on the weekends for sport or occasionally through the week. So it was something pretty important, but I always loved cricket went from a young fella. There was plenty of people that said I wasn't good enough to, you know, couldn't bowl, or under 16s, my captain wouldn't give me a bowl. And when I moved to Sydney, plenty of people saying that I wasn't good enough for Narromine, let alone move to Sydney. But I always enjoyed it. I always thought I was good enough, had that self-belief. But I played sport just because I loved it. And in the bush, it was, like I said, it's something that brings the community together as well.
There were plenty of people obviously telling you you couldn't do it, but one man who, my understanding is, said you could. Your potential was spotted by Dougie Walters. Is that right?
Yeah, it sort of played in a Tui's Country Cup match, it was called back then, where three named players come down and play for two local teams. It was Dubbo versus Parks back in 1988. And, for Dubbo, we had Mark Taylor, Greg Matthews, and I think it was Steve Smith. And for Parks, they had Mark Waugh, Steve Small, and Dougie. And Dougie sort of saw me, thought I had a bit of potential, and within the next few months, I got a call up from Steve Rickson, who was captain coach of Sutherland down here in the Shire where I live, and the rest is history.
And that was the start of greatness. Glenn McGrath is the voice you're listening to on the Winter Champion Series on Halftime. Rodney Hogg is with us as well. We'll get to a break, come back very shortly. Welcome back to Halftime. The Winter Champion Series with Rodney Hogg continues this Tuesday afternoon. Our very special guest is Glenn McGrath, Hoggy.
You've played with four great captains. If you walked into a room tonight and the four captains were in the room, I'm talking about Border, Taylor, Steve, Warren, Ponting, and obviously I suppose Shane captained you a little bit too. It was a little break of about 6-1 days. If they're all in the one room, which captain would you go to first and have a chat to?
I'd probably just hang in the corner and wait for him to come over to me. But I don't know. It's...
Did you enjoy one of the captains more than all the others, or they all had their own role?
No, they all had their own role and took the team to a different area, you know, a different spot. You know, from A, B, had a reasonably ordinary team to start with and got them up near the top. And then, you know, the way Tubby, Mark Taylor and Steve Waugh, captain, and, you know, up to the best team in the world. And poor old Rick, you know, where do you take the team from there? But, you know, he did a great job as well. So I get on well with all the guys. There's not one that I would choose before anyone else. Steve Waugh was my best man at my first wedding. So we're still good mates. And I went through the cricket academy with Ricky. And AB and Tubb are good mates, so yeah, it's hard to narrow it down to one.
Well, on the ground, let's get fair dinkum. There must have been a couple. You must have had a couple of disputes. I remember. I'll give you one where you should have been having a go at the Oval when I was standing there with Ross Stevenson and watching. Which when Shane dropped Peterson, and then after lunch, Peterson got on top of Brett Lee. And you still weren't bowling, I'll just give it. Was there a moment where you thought, hey, hang on a minute, I should be bowling? Did you ever come up to the captain and say, hey, I want to get on now?
Yeah, I always let them know I was ready to go. And whenever they said, have a break, I always put my finger up and said, one more. I wanted to bowl every second over the innings when we were bowling. So, you know, you can't take wickets when you're not bowling. And I just wanted to get out there and bowl every over. So, you know, I was always ready to go. I think I'm a team player as well, so I was happy to do what the captain wanted me to do.
That's pretty interesting, because as a fast bowler, I suppose I'm a lot shorter than you. I had to run in as fast as I possibly could. But did you bowl within yourself a little bit when you say you're always ready for another couple of overs? Like, I'd be gone after three or four or five, and let's not talk about me. But so you always had that. Did you bowl a little bit within yourself at times?
I never felt that I did. Always I felt I was putting in every ball, but you look at the highlights or the video footage and it looked like I was just jogging in, rolling my arm over. But I always felt I was putting in pretty hard. But I don't know, the more I bowled, the better I felt. The longest spells I bowled were sort of 17, 18 overs in a row in the West Indies a couple of times. So that's, like I said, I just wanted to keep bowling.
The 2005 Ashes, I love talking to anybody who played in that game. Love talking about it because that was a war. At the Lords that first day, that was a war. Overcast, beautiful conditions for a war. Dark, you can't see the enemy. That was an amazing first day and an amazing test match. And you had a ripper, didn't you? I think you...
it was incredible. Sort of the Ashes had been built up to be... Yeah, you know, a quality one. England have been playing well. They had the same team together. They were playing with a lot of confidence. And, you know, we batted first. I'm not sure who won the toss, but we batted first, and England came hard at us.
Really hard.
Got hit and, you know, split him just under the eye. And, you know, they knocked us over, I think, just before tea on day one. And then we came out after tea, and, you know, I was sitting on 499 test wickets, so I was lucky enough to get the first wicket, Marcus Trescothick, and then went on to get four quick ones after that. So, yeah, it was just an amazing day. And my father was the first time he travelled overseas. He came over to watch that game, and he just loved it. I think he enjoyed the action in the off the field more, where the English crowd were giving it to the Aussies in the morning, and then the Aussies were giving it to the English in the afternoon. So he said he enjoyed that as much as the cricket, but it was pretty amazing first day, and then went on to win that first test match.
Well, I remember that first day better than any games I played in, really, because of what happened at the start of play. But then I had to do the break, the tea break, and we'd been knocked over for under 200 or a bit, or probably 180, 190, something like that. We'd been knocked over, and there was about 250 people in this room, all English, and they're all going, you know, and I was the only Aussie, so they're having a go at me because they'd knocked us over. But while we're in there was no TVs on, and you came out straight after tea and took two quick wickets, so they were virtually two for none. So I was just looking for all those people to have a bit of a go at them, especially when you took the six for us.
One thing you missed out there, out of that 180, I was 20 not out as well.
Were you?
To let you know. Yeah, then I scored 10 not out in the second dig. I've scored, never been dismissed at Lords, but so I like to get that in whenever I can.
Well, and fair enough too. Hey, you bowled had a pretty good relationship with Mike Atherton. You smacked him. What was it like bowling to him? He was your bunny.
Yeah, poor old Athers, by the end of it, it was nearly too easy. But, yeah, I got him out 19 times in Test cricket. And, it was... You get a bit of a hold over a certain batsman and Yeah, but that's international sport, I guess, where you know, it's a mental game is probably as important as the skill level. So you get a hold over someone, you can really cash in.
Well, you also had a pretty good hold over Brian Lara too. You got him 15 times. I mean, we're talking rare air with the quality of batsman that Brian Lara was.
Yeah, no. So Brian, well, it was a little bit different because Brian scored some big hundreds, big double hundreds against us as well. So that was more sort of 50-50. But, yeah, he's a quality player. But, you know, to get someone like him out 15 times is, you know, something I'm pretty happy with.
You had huge self-belief. And I reckon you're a very modest sort of person. But you must put the chest out with the World Cups, the most wickets in World Cups, 71 wickets. 71 wickets in World Cups. No one's ever going to go near that again.
Oh, it probably means I played a few more games than everyone else. But I was lucky enough to play in four World Cups in pretty amazing year of Australian cricket. So, yeah, it's a nice little honour, that one. You know, 71 wickets and, you know, to finish in the West Indies with another World Cup win. You know, to be involved in three World Cup wins as a team is something pretty special too.
And you've got 26 wickets at Lords. You said you batted very well at Lords, but you also I reckon you bowled pretty well. You got 26 wickets at 11. Every time you met the Queen, did she say, "Oh, not you again, Glenn"?
I had tea with the Queen a couple of times at Buckingham Palace, but yeah, we didn't talk much about cricket. I don't think that was one of her favourite sports, but to play at Lords, it's one of my favourite grounds in the world, and the slope that goes from. From the members' end, goes from left to right across the field. Some of them say up to 9 or 11 feet the slope across the field. So it was just a wicket that just really suited my style of bowling, I think.
Just bringing the ball back in, you loved it.
Yeah. Just hit that length. You know, sometimes it'll hold the line, go up the hill. Other time with the slope, just come back down into the stumps of the right-hander. So, you know, there was enough natural variation there, and I just tried to keep it simple, and you know, the ball did the rest.
Were there any other grounds or pitches and wickets around the world that were similar in that vein?
I can't think of any other wickets or grounds that have that slope. Most of them are pretty level.
Yeah.
You know, the SCG is my favourite ground in the world, home ground. But you know, to play Boxing Day Test in front of the MCG, you know, it's an amazing feeling too.
And we enjoy watching you do that every year as well. Very much down here, Glenn, at the mighty MCG. We'll take a break. Glenn McGrath is with us in the Winter Champion Series. Hoggy's here as well. Back shortly. Welcome back to Halftime, the Winter Champion Series. Glenn McGrath, is with us as our special guest this afternoon. But, Hoggy, it's time to get down to some nitty-gritty, please.
Let's go through just a couple of your test matches. The 12th test match you played was in Trinidad. And that's the one where Australia made 128 and Stephen Waugh got 63 not out. Mm. What was that day like? I know, and then you bowled and we knocked them over for 136 and you took 6 for 47. So you've had a really good game, but it was a game that Australia lost in.
Yeah, we lost that game in about 2.5 days. So I remember walking out the start of the match and we went out to see the wicket and you couldn't pick out which wicket we were using. The square was just grass. It was just green. And there was no wicket marked out. So the ball was doing plenty. It favoured the bowlers a little bit too much. But, I think that famous incident where Stephen standing toe-to-toe with Curtly Ambrose, it's got some good pictures there.
Yeah.
Curly, you wouldn't meet a nicer bloke than Curly. Never said anything on the field. And there he was, you know, standing toe-to-toe with Stephen. But it was, amazing... amazing game, but a little bit too dominated by the bowlers. I didn't enjoy batting that game.
There was plenty of moments in time when...
Well, you were not out in the second innings, not out.
No, I think I did get out, but anyway.
Well, when you first looked at the wicket, you weren't thinking about your batting. You were thinking about, hey, I'm going to cash in here with a few wickets, weren't you?
Well, I just the previous match was in Barbados, and I took my first 5-wicket haul in Test cricket, so I was feeling pretty good about myself. You know, it's a type of toss you want to win and have a bowl first. But, I've played in Trinidad where it's been that flat that the wicketkeepers come up to the stump. So that's a bit of an insult when they do that. But on that day, they were standing way back.
Your 30th test match was at Lords and an amazing game, 8 for 38. You knocked over England for 77. So it's what bit happening that day or you just stopped bowl beautifully?
Oh, we'd sort of played pretty poorly the game before at Edgbath and England won. It was back in 97 and first time at Lords. It's a special place, Lords. You know, it's the history, you know, the home of cricket, all the history, the tradition, everything else that goes with the ground. And we just really lifted. We needed to do something. It's a bit overcast, and when it's overcast at Lord's, it seems to do a bit more. And, yeah, we knocked England over for 77, and the rain sort of played a big part in that game, unfortunately. It ended up being a draw, but we turned the tide. We started playing better and sort of dominated for the rest of that series. But to play at Lord's is a special place, and get your name up on the honour board is something special too.
Well, it's up there a few times. Is it four or three or four? Four, I think?
No, only three times. So I looked at the 100. But the other batsmen didn't hang around with me long enough for me to get there. So yeah.
Just on that game, just on that game at Lord's, Matty Elliott got 112, a brilliant 112 on a wicket that really was a hard track to bat on. Any thoughts on why Matty didn't play more Test cricket?
Yeah, not sure. He played pretty well. I think he got 199 at Headingley as well. So you know, you've got some good scores. I don't know. It's all about consistency, isn't it? And yeah, Michael Slater was there, and Mark Taylor, and then Justin Langer took over from Michael Slater in I think 2001. So you know, it's tough going out facing the new ball. But Matty Elliott, Herbie, he did well. He's got some good hundreds for Australia, but unfortunately. Yeah. You know, he probably didn't play as much as he would have liked to.
There was an amazing game, your 48th Test match. And I'm sorry to go through them all, but we haven't got 5 hours. Your 48th test match was in Barbados. And just one of those ones the selectors got together and made one of those decisions where they'd go for two leggies, two great leg spin bowlers, but in the one team against a modern, well, a megastar left-hand batsman. You know, I'm talking about Warner McGill versus...
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, the poor old fast bowler's got to churn out a few overs, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it was Mark Waugh that said the spinners were there to give the fast bowlers a break, wasn't it? But no, it's both McGiller and especially, you know, Warney's once in a generation player or more. He's something pretty special. Whereas Stewie McGill, if he played in any other era, you know, he probably would have taken 400 Test wickets plus. So. To have both those guys, it was always interesting. There seemed to be a little bit of competition between the two, but it was always a good friendly rivalry. But if I remember correctly, I think Brian ended up with 150 that match, and they won with one wicket to spare. So I think it only happened a few times where McGiller and Warney played in the same match together.
Well, I don't want to bag the two greats because obviously superstars, but between them they took two for 234. So that didn't quite work. In that game. But you were forced to bowl 33 overs in the first innings, four for 128. But the second innings you had to bowl 44 overs. And as you said, Lara got 153. That duel between you and Lara was just legendary.
Yeah, it was the first time we used the Duke cricket ball in the West Indies, and it was the English cricket ball, and it was going reverse swing after about 12, 13 overs. So I probably favoured the fast bowlers more in that respect. It wasn't turning a great deal. So, you know, I bowled plenty of overs, but unfortunately we fell one wicket short and Brian just played an incredible innings.
Just on the Duke cricket ball, I'm glad you brought that up. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about that every time we get over to England for an Ashes campaign. Did you struggle with or have one ball suit you better, the Kookaburra or the Duke, or just be able to deal with both?
I didn't mind what ball we used, but the Duke cricket ball, I love bowling with it. It seemed smaller in the hand, had a bigger seam, and like I said, it seemed to go reverse swing a lot better. And, you know, with the Kookaburra, I averaged about 4.5 or over 4 wickets a test. And with the Duke cricket ball, I averaged over 6 wickets a test. So, you know, give me the Duke cricket ball. But I think they changed the Duke ball a few years back where they said it was a little bit too much in favour of the bowlers. And it's not quite the same as what it used to be. It's a little bit better for the batsmen now.
Well, we need Mitchell with this Ashes coming up to get used to bowl better with a Duke, don't we? That's his only downfall at the moment.
You get both Mitchells bowling well, as well as the rest of fast bowling. It's going to be tough work for the pump.
Well, they are flying high after their win over New Zealand overnight, Glenn, but still some work to do, you'd think, before the Ashes hits. Glenn McGrath, our special guest in the Winter Champion Series. Hoggy's here as well. Back with more shortly on Halftime. Welcome back to Halftime. Rodney Hogg is with us, as he is on a Tuesday afternoon. Our special guest in the Winter Champion Series today, Glenn McGrath, Hoggy.
I found India just a waste of time, too hot and the wickets too flat, but you seem to love India and the guys couldn't score off you. I mean, the 68th test match in Mumbai, you've bowled 19 overs, 13 maidens, 3 for 19. That's a test match. That's not the under-15s. And in the second innings, 17 overs, 9 maidens, 2 for 25. Was it your height or just... And it was a pretty good batting lineup from India.
Yeah, I think I just try to adjust to the conditions, and to bowl in Australia is one thing where you've got the bounce, the pace and a bit of seam movement, whereas in India you don't get any of that. So you've got to look at other ways to pay wickets and build up pressure and stop scoring. So, you know, just the new ball carries through okay, and then you know, you look after the ball and you get a bit of reverse swing, you start bowling a lot straighter and set a little bit more defensive field. So over there, you can't just blast teams out. So it's just about building up pressure, take away their scoring options and hopefully pick up a wicket or two. And that's why I approached it over there. And, you know, it's that game, I remember vaguely, but, yeah, that's how I went about it. Just cut down the scoring options and hopefully pick up a few wickets.
I reckon I remember that one vividly. I reckon that was the test, Glenn, where Tendulkar was on fire and was bludgeoning all the other bowlers, Gillespie and Phlegm, all across the park. And he'd almost see you out. He'd let you bowl and get through the over and then try and bludgeon from the other end. You're bowling that well.
I think Sachin sometimes, I always felt that I could change his game. He'd sort of just wait for a bad ball. And if you didn't give him a bad ball, then he wouldn't score. But, you know, you need to be bowling well from both ends. That was his game plan, obviously. And, you know, he's one of the greats of all time. So it worked well for him that day.
Great memory, half.
Other occasions.
Yeah, I remember
great
that.
Great memory, because he got 76 out of 176 and 65 out of... We'll get to the next test match, because that's one of the all-time historic test matches at Eden Gardens, when Australia made 445. And then sometimes it doesn't pay to bowl too well, Glenn, does it?
Yeah, that game was amazing. You know, we thought we had it won. We had Sachin out. They were four down, still needing 100-odd for us to bat again. But the thing that had happened... We'd sort of bowled pretty well the first innings. And then they put on for the 10th wicket, they put on a little bit of a partnership, and VVS Laxman just found a bit of form. He was batting pretty ordinarily before that. But that extra half an hour batting with Venkatesh Prasad, I think it was, for that number 11,
was
just gave him a little bit of confidence, just took the wind out of it slightly. We had such a massive lead. And, you know, Steve Waugh was always an aggressive captain, and we were never going to take a backward step. So when he suggested following on, enforcing the follow on, you know, we're always going to go for it. So that was just one of those innings where VVS Laxman and Rahul Dravid batted all day, didn't look like getting out, and really made us pay. And it, yeah, but if it takes something special like the innings of those two guys to beat us, then we can live with it. So,
but you bowl when you've had to bowl 14 overs, they made 171 in their first innings, chasing 445. You'd bowl 14 overs, then you start bowling the second innings, and if you don't get early scalps, then those 14 overs start to become 20, 30. So one sort of innings, isn't it? So they made seven, declared for 657, and Laxman, the 281 was just absolutely sensational, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, but we had them four for 100-odd overnight, and just, you know, we were coming to the ground the next day thinking the game's going to be over today, we're going to win our 17th test match in a row, and things didn't go to plan. So it's never over till it's over.
Harbhajan Singh was feeling pretty important for the Indians that test, 13 wickets, 7 in that second innings. He was a pretty fiery competitor and pretty vocal out there on the grounds from what I could see in the stands, Glenn. A bit like yourself, pretty confident. What was he like to play against?
I think he had me covered with out in the middle sometimes. But no, he was, hey, he's the type of player. He's aggressive, in your face. That's the way he went about it. More a fast bowler style. But, you know, he did very well for India and gave them a bit of an enforcer, someone to take it to the opposition. And he bowled well that day. He was a handful over in those conditions. He knows it so well. And won the test match for him, bowling second. You know, bowling that last innings.
You notice, Glenn, I've steered away from your 61, but I will talk about a very, very important innings of yours. You faced 9 deliveries and you're 5 not out at Old Trafford in 2005. that was a tense 9 balls to be faced, wasn't it?
That was, yeah, it's funny how I was nervous all day until the 9th wicket fell, and then I'm in. And it sort of gives you, I guess it gives you a somewhere to channel your you know, the nerves or that anticipation. So just get out there and focus on the ball. And batting with Brett Lee, only had to get through a couple of overs to save that test match. And we didn't save too many. We either won them easily or occasionally lost the odd one. But it was good to hang on to that day and go into the next game with the one all with two tests to play. Unfortunately, went on to lose that series. But, yeah, it was a few tense moments, but it was good to draw a match. I never won a test match batting. I only won one day match where I was out batting, where Bevo hit the four off the last ball to win the match. It was something pretty amazing. But it was only when I was batting, basically the game was over or we lost.
In fairness, it wasn't really your job, Glenn, but you had a crack anyway. Glenn McGrath, our special guest in the Winter Champion Series, back for the final seg after this. Glenn McGrath has been our special guest on Halftime this afternoon in the Winter Champion Series, and Rodney Hogg with us as well.
Your last test match at your favourite ground, the Sydney Cricket Ground, and it was a start, it was the end of your career, but it was a certainly start of an amazing time with the McGrath Foundation. You took a wicket with your last ball. James Anderson caught Hussey Bowl McGrath. Warner, yourself and Langer finished your careers that day. Tell us about what it's been like to finish that day and then moving on with the Sydney Cricket Ground and the ACB with your work with the McGrath Foundation.
Yeah, no, it's sort of a pretty special way to finish on your favourite ground, your home ground, take a wicket on your last ball, win the Ashes 5-0 and sort of regain them after losing in 2005. You know, to finish with both Justin and Shane, two guys I played a lot of cricket with, I think adds a little bit something special to it too. And then, yeah, I must say, since I've been retired, I've never missed playing, which means I retired at the right time. But to see what the Sydney Test has become now, or nearly more so the Sydney Pink Test, that it's been associated with the McGrath Foundation for the last 6 years now, and it's grown into something, you know, quite unique. But, I can't think of too many other charities that have teamed up with a sporting event that's been so successful and had the support like we have. You know, to turn up to day three, to see everything in pink, from the players with the logos on the ground and all the signage. But to see everyone turn up in pink, I think, is something quite amazing. And I'm pretty busy that day, and I really have to take sort of time out to really stop and take it all in and take in the enormity of all. So I'm really proud of what's been created there. Hopefully it'll continue for a long time, and it's gone towards helping a lot of Australian families going through breast cancer. So, like I've always said, I feel I'm a very lucky person, and if I can give back something in some small way, more than happy to do that. Very proud of what's been created at Sydney Test.
And what was so beautiful, the last Ashes, it finished in 3 days. It finished on McGrath Foundation Day. So they were giving out the awards there. Everyone's in pink the whole day. Any plans of, say, the MCG, third day at the MCG, or you're just going to focus on the third day at Sydney?
That's where we are at the moment. We'd like to sort of, have something across the whole of Australia on day three of the Sydney Test. I think that would be pretty amazing. We do little bits and pieces at other test match throughout the Australian summer. But at the end of the day, that's sort of controlled by Cricket Australia. And really proud to be working alongside those guys. And they deserve credit for what's been created there at the Sydney Test as well. So I'd like to see it go Australia-wide on that day. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's a marvellous relationship, and it's a wonderful cause, of course, and you're doing a hell of a job with the McGrath Foundation, Glenn. So well done on that with all your team. Just before we let you go, the famous pre-series predictions, you would come out and make big predictions about what would happen through the series that was going to be upcoming. Did you ever get any flack from your teammates? But would you shut the hell up, McGrath, that sort of stuff?
Oh, Ricky Ponting and Damien Martin hated me making predictions, but after a while I think they just accepted that's what I did. But, the team I was lucky enough to be part of, you only had to look around the field and see the calibre of players that were there. I thought if we're going to play pretty badly to draw a game, let alone lose one. So I thought that was pretty straightforward. I was always happy to make those predictions. And even now I've retired, it's a little tougher to make predictions because you don't have any control. But I'm still happy to predict that Australia will win this Ashes series 5-0 against the Poms.
Well, we're happy to have that exclusively on the program. It's been an absolute joy to chat to you this afternoon, Glenn. Really appreciate your time, and good luck with the new bub that's on the way, of course, the foundation, all the else that you're doing in cricket as well. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
Glenn McGrath, the champion with us on the Winter Champion Series. Great stuff, Hoggy. Good work from you.
And he didn't use the word dodgy. He loves using that word dodgy.
Nothing dodgy about this program, Rodney.